While fitness culture has existed in America for decades, today's version of it can seem amplified. With Instagram fitness influencers promoting their own product lines from workout guides to barbell pads, a flooded supplement market with products like fat burners, and wellness brands and exercise classes with marketing that makes exercise look cool or maybe just overwhelming. The point being, the fitness industry is big, and we're trying to figure out, is it all hype? What were just more ways to spend our money? Or are more of us actually working out and getting healthier? Natalia Petrozella is an historian and contemporary American politics and culture, and also an associate professor of history at the New School. She's a journalist and author with a forthcoming book on American fitness culture called Fit Nation: How America Embraced Exercise as the Government Abandoned It. Natalia, thank you for joining us today.
Thank you for inviting me.
Okay, so is this bigger than ever, or does it just feel like it?
It is definitely bigger than ever. There's no question. I mean, I think that we can see over the last 75 years or so, fitness culture kind of expanding in the U.S. Throughout, but definitely today, we see fitness in almost every aspect of our life, from fashion to, education to digital technologies. So yes, it is getting bigger and bigger, but I think it's important to realize that doesn't mean that we as a nation are getting fitter and fitter. And I think that's a really important distinction.
Okay, so explain that. The fitness industry is bigger, but we're not getting more fit. What?
Right. So, I know it seems not to make sense. Well, if you look at the data, I mean, there hasn't actually been a boom in Americans of all socioeconomic backgrounds getting more fit and having more access to fitness and recreation options. So even as our culture, even as the business and the industry has boomed, it's really remained a private market. And so we've actually seen massive cuts in public physical education and in community recreation activities. And so it's no mystery when you see that, more Americans might be more active than ever, but they're concentrated in higher socioeconomic classes. That has everything to do with that privatization.
And when you say privatization, what are you talking about here when it comes to fitness?
Yeah, I'm talking about the fact that fitness is primarily accessible through a private market, through industries, through going to a gym that you pay a membership for, through a product that you order online and that comes to your home, that we can't really rely in this country. And it's never been perfect, by the way, but it's been better in some moments. We can't really rely on the fact that you'll go to school as a kid and you'll have enough physical education that it will help you be, meaningfully healthy and also foster a lifelong love of exercise. We can't rely on the fact that the neighborhoods most Americans live in are close to a park or are safe enough to run outside or have a running trail nearby. Actually, those neighborhoods that have that tend to be in the kind of neighborhoods where a lot of people have enough money to buy into private options. So that's what I mean.
Yeah. And although maybe our mindset has changed some, I think most people think exercise is a good idea. We usually don't consider people who exercise to be weird, but exercise was not always mainstream. I mean, several decades ago, it was only for certain people. How was that?
Yeah, that's exactly right. And that's a big part of the story that I'm trying to tell beyond this inequality angle, which is that today, even though we're not a very fit nation, most people think working out is virtuous. Like, even when I say I'm a historian writing this book, people are like, oh, I should go to the gym more. I'm like, I'm not the police, but that feeling that that's the right thing to do is of relatively recent vintage. And if you look even in like the 1950s or into the 1960s, if you were someone who exercised regularly, who was not an athlete or, not in the image business as an actor or someone who's like on screen, it was considered very strange. Men were considered suspicious that it wasn't really masculine to care so much about your body and what you looked like and to want to keep the company of other sweaty men so frequently. So it was a real sort of, blow to mainstream masculinity to be someone who exercised frequently. And then related to that, many women who were into particularly weightlifting were seen as compromising their femininity, compromising their fertility. And if you lift weights or if you run long distances, you're not going to be able to have babies. And what kind of woman would risk that? that two, you will develop muscular muscles, which make you unattractive and manly. And then three, and I think this is super interesting, that athletics and fitness as well, it cultivates an unladylike sensibility. This will make you too individualistic. This will make you too ambitious. And that's not what girls and women should be like. So, you know, yeah, and they haven't left us completely, but I think it's really surprising to most people that, you know, I should go to the gym was not an expression of like positive character not that long ago.
Natalia Pedrazella is an historian of contemporary American politics and culture, and her new book about fitness culture is called Fit Nation: How America Embraced Exercise as the Government Abandoned It. Your calls are welcome at 800-642-1234. What questions do you have about how our culture has shifted when it comes to fitness? Do you want to talk about the role of fitness in schools or in our daily lives or based on gender? We're here for you at 800-642-1234. You can also email us at ideas@WPR.org. And Natalia, you've got this book about American fitness culture ongoing. When we say culture, describe that for us, because that includes more than just going to the gym a few times a week or attending a spin class. What is culture really about?
Yeah, and I should say I'm still writing the book, so it'll come out next year, I plan. But yeah, so I use fitness culture because it's in part a way of expressing in shorthand the way fitness is in every part of our lives now, right? This isn't just a kind of narrow history of, say, Muscle Beach or the rise of commercial gyms. This is about the way fitness has become an ethos for many Americans, even if it's one that we kind of fail to meet.
We even see brands, we can name off the top of our head Lululemon being one of the most well-known that have popped up to serve specifically this growing industry. So fitness fashion is now a thing that's part of this culture.
Absolutely. And that's part of a kind of conspicuous consumption, right? The idea that you don't just go to the gym, you post about it, you wear clothes that advertise you're on the way to the gym or on the way back from the gym. I think Lululemon was really kind of led the way in making athleisure clothing that made gym wear kind of public and also expensive. It became another thing to spend money on. If you read books about fitness in the 1960s or 70s, they all say, like, just find some old clothes you no longer wear to work. I mean, there was no industry for it at that time.
Right. Except now we see it as not only is there a high price point on some of these brands, but they signal something to everybody else around.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. They signal affluence. They signal discipline. They signal virtue. They're also often tight. So they signal like a lot of whatever your body looks like. Right. They're definitely a kind of performance.
We're talking with Natalia Pedrazella, who is an historian of contemporary American politics and culture, also an associate professor of history at the New School. She's also a journalist and an author, and we're talking about fitness culture in today's world and the huge growth of this industry. And we want to hear from you. There's a line for you at 800-642-1234. Have you noticed more people in your life, maybe including you, become more interested in fitness and exercise? Are you a participant in fitness culture? Do you go to classes? Do you like to dress the part? What do you see changing? 800-642-1234 is the number to call. You can also email ideas@WPR.org. Our conversation about fitness culture continues here on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network. I'm Keely Boltina. We're talking about the current fitness industry, what fitness culture looks like in today's world. Our guest is Natalia Pedrazella. She's writing the book Fit Nation: How America Embraced Exercise as the Government Abandoned It. And we want to hear from you. 800-642-1234. Are you spending more of your money on fitness and wellness related things, supplements, vitamins, athletic clothes, classes, and past for gyms? Maybe you've been going to a gym or attending fitness classes for a while now. What have you seen change? Call 800-642-1234 or drop us a tweet at Central Time WPR. Natalia, we're talking about the fashion as far as the fitness culture goes, but there's also this component that could probably be an entirely different discussion, and that's food and snack market growth in relation to people's interest in wellness. This is a huge deal.
Oh, it is a huge deal. And it could be in another episode or maybe three other episodes. But yeah, I mean, we could come at this from a variety of angles, but I definitely think, of course, you can't talk about fitness without food. And I think that it's no accident that fast food exploded in the 1980s at the same time that there was a big boom in fitness as well. And in some ways, you know, I think that is based on a fallacy a lot of people still believe, which is that you can out-exercise a bad diet. And any fitness trainer will tell you that's not the case. But I think that in many ways, as Americans have become less healthy, that kind of insecurity and worry and, you know, laudable desire to invest money in something like your own health has created this space for the fitness industry to boom. Because if you're eating fast food a lot, it's, you know, that's the most affordable thing for a lot of people. That's going to affect your health. And then you're also a prime target for a fitness industry, which is ready to say, hey, we'll sell you something else. And that's going to make you healthy. And that's a pretty damaging cycle.
Historically, though, I mean, have granola bars and protein supplements and all kinds of seeds that you add to your smoothies, have those always gone hand in hand with exercise and fitness?
Yeah, that's a great question. Yes. I mean, you know, people talked about the health nuts, quote unquote, in the early 20th century, who were people who were both into all kind, who were really into bodily experimentation. And that meant intense exercise, yoga at a time when like no one in the US pretty much did yoga, and also natural foods, right? Plant-based diets. I mean, if you were a vegetarian in the early 20th century, you were very strange. Similarly to if you lifted weights or if you did yoga, and those things definitely came together. So we've always seen that connected, but the kind of commodification and commercialization of the energy bar and, you know, all kinds of other supplements, that's much more recent. And in many ways is part of the co-optation of what was once like anti-capitalist into the industry.
So they're finding ways to leverage how people are acting to make money then.
Yes. I mean, that is like the American story of basically everything, and fitness is no exception.
That's fair. Let's go ahead and bring in a caller. Danny from Milwaukee is with us now. Hi, Danny.
Hi. I just wanted to comment and get your guest comments on the connection that our society and the fitness industry has made on fitness models and them being extremely healthy and us wanting to be cut and lean. And when in all reality, those low body fat percentages are not actually healthy for women or men, but in particularly body image for women.
Oh, Danny, thank you so much for bringing that up. What do you think, Natalia?
Yeah, Danny, that is such a great point. And, you know, I do a lot of kind of fitness activism, too. And one of my main commitments, particularly when I work with women, is to separate the idea that any particular look signifies fitness or health. Because I think, as Danny brings up, that's so problematic. A lot of what we consider to be healthy in this culture is not actually healthy or not necessarily healthy. And I think, you know, the industry is changing in a lot of ways, but it's in very many ways perpetuated the idea that weight loss should be everyone's primary fitness goal and that being thin is synonymous with being fit. That is absolutely not true.
How does the online piece fit into this then? Because we do see the internet, we do see those connections, social media, Instagram, really having a strong foothold in this area.
Yeah, I think, I mean, depending on the mood I'm in, I come off really optimistic or pessimistic about the role of, you know, the online role in shaping fitness culture, particularly around body image. I think that, look, there's no shortage of really damaging stuff out there, which is selling people who have no expertise, giving bad advice, selling bad topics, bad products, and perpetuating the idea that if you have this, you know, like corset you work out in, or if you have a particular body, that means that you're fit. On the other hand, we cannot ignore the way that, you know, what was once called the body positive movement, although that's been a little bit discredited, but, you know, we cannot, I think, devalue the way that social media in particular has welcomed all many more kinds of bodies. And I mean, age, ability, race, gender, The internet has been amazing in doing that. And we've actually seen mainstream media have to kind of keep up, even in a halting way. You know, the fact that these women's magazines no longer use the term bikini body anymore seems almost quaint, but that is totally a result of these online influencers who really said, you know, fit bodies can look a whole variety of ways. And so I do think there's a very positive story about the role of social media in this as well.
Natalia Petrozella is an historian of contemporary American politics and culture, and we're talking about fitness culture here. There's still time for you if you have a question or a comment here at 800-642-1234. Again, that number is 800-642-1234. Natalia, you want to stick with inclusivity in fitness culture? We saw back in the 1920s, YMCAs open to encourage men to exercise and use them. In the 70s and 80s, women joined in with things like jazzercise and aerobics. How has this demographic of who participates in exercise changed culturally?
It's expanded a lot. As I mentioned earlier in the interview, if you were someone who wanted to exercise regularly, even in the 50s or early 60s, that was very strange. We have seen basically the expansion of exercise to include anyone who can pay for it, honestly. And that's not to say that every space is equally inclusive of people who are older or who have larger bodies or who are ethnic and racial minorities or who are women. I mean, there's a whole lot of interesting work, for example, showing that like women are still feel less welcome and uncomfortable on the weightlifting part of gym floors and tend to flock to studios, right? That there are all kinds of forms of like informal segregation that go on that keep certain places very white in particular. But I think that, you know, if you look at a fitness club in the 1980s, I think that a lot of people would say, you know, those are places where you look like you already have to be fit to go there. Now, one of the biggest demographics for gym memberships are people over 55. I mean, that in itself is a really, really big difference. So I think that is a positive thing, that more people feel welcome in the pursuit of becoming healthier and more fit in these particular spaces and more broadly. But I wish that we could extend that socioeconomically, because the inclusivity of a lot of these spaces stops the second it involves letting people in the door who can't pay often very hefty fees. And that's a real issue.
So with these fitness companies and these flashy brands, they want us to support them through their dollars. Does that detract from the larger goal of getting healthier and being more active? Or is that just part of it and can be empowering that you, when you pull on your Lululemon leggings, you feel like you can do it?
Yes. I mean, I've actually written an article like that a long time ago. I was a Lululemon ambassador. I don't think we talked about it, but I teach fitness as well. So I'm like really in this. I am not so judgy that I want to say that just because something is, you know, a capitalist product, it doesn't mean that real good doesn't come from it. Absolutely. There's no question. But I think that I think it is important for all of us to kind of take a note of pause and look around the spaces that we enjoy, whether it's a Lululemon store or a particular gym or studio, and just ask ourselves, who's in this room and who's not in this room? Why is that? How am I perpetuating that inclusion or exclusion? What can I do differently? I just think the gym is such a big part of American life right now, figuratively and literally, that we've got to take it seriously as a site, like schools, like housing, like all kinds of other places where inequalities, real meaningful ones, are also perpetuated, and to fight them accordingly. So that's kind of the hill I'll die on.
We can't talk about health right now today without acknowledging that COVID-19 is absolutely affecting the fitness industry. Yeah. We see gyms and yoga studios closing down to try to make sure that their patrons can stay safe. How does that fit into this story?
Oh my, it's such a strange chapter right now. I mean, yeah, I'm talking to you from New York City, and gyms are completely shut down in New York. And I think that is a very hard thing for a lot of New Yorkers to wrap their heads around, because here's this kind of space, which has always been seen as a kind of reprieve, as a kind of good place to go to promote your own health. And now we're being told, quite rightfully so, you can't go to those places because it's unhealthy to go there, right? Because you could contract mm-hmm. or spread this virus. And so what we're seeing today is all those in real life places shut down, but a huge boom in digital fitness. And I'm happy to see in free digital fitness. I mean, I can't count the number of emails in my inbox about either individual entrepreneurs or businesses that are opening up for 30 days or more doing free online exercise. And I think that's wonderful because, you know, a lot of these places are very small businesses, which are very strapped and really damaged by losing this kind of income. So I think that's important to see too. We're all wrapped up in, the perils and the promises of this fitness industry.
Yeah. Natalia, any advice for people wanting to stay active or get fit while we're also being told remain at home whenever possible?
Yeah, well, I would definitely kind of key into wherever you'd like to go when you can go outside and see if your favorite studios or gyms are offering online workouts. I will say I didn't come on this to promote here, but I am teaching a class on Thursday for free at noon Eastern called Intensati, which is really fun. And you can get that on the Intensati YouTube channel. But I think really looking into the things you already like and then seeing what they're offering online is awesome. Also, depending where you are, going for a run or a walk outside in a non-crowded place. I ran 10 miles today, which I have not done in a very long time, but just I was grateful for the fresh air. So, yeah.
Right. So maybe not so much running in groups right now or participating exactly. in those group classes, but finding ways to still get a little bit of exercise into your day wherever you can.
Yeah, it is crucial. We need our mental health and our physical health more than ever right now. And I worry that that's going to fall to the wayside for a lot of people who are cooped up inside. But let's do our best, but also not beat ourselves up if we drop our training regimes, because it's almost impossible to do what you thought you were going to do this week, given what's going on.
Yeah, and we just have a minute left. But this idea that, if I can't run 10 miles today, then I might as well give up and sit on the couch. I suspect that you think there's some middle ground.
Absolutely. And I should say, I never run 10 miles. It was very strange that I did so today. So I feel the need to announce it on live radio.
Full disclosure.
Yeah, exactly. So, right. I think that's absolutely important. Like this class I'm teaching on Thursday online is 30 minutes and it doesn't have to be rigorous. But I think getting out of your desk, moving around, moving your body in whatever way feels good to you, but maybe, you need a little more of an oomph to do it. Here is your oomph. Get up and move. Everybody in your life will be happier for it.
Natalia, thank you so much for joining us. Natalia Petrozella is an historian of contemporary American politics and culture, and she's also a journalist and author. This is Central Time.